I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Later in the program, Rod Milam will join us to discuss his work over the last year and a half on Sounding the Chord, a documentary of professional musicians who have lived in University City. We also have an interview that St. Louis Public Radio's Mike Schran conducted with singer-songwriter Nick Lowe. And speaking of conducting, our first guest knows a little bit about that. The St. Louis Symphony's music director, David Robertson, is collecting himself with his family after returning from a European tour, his first with the St. Louis Symphony and the first for the orchestra since 1998. David Robertson joins us now from New York. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. I understand that this is you're getting a little respite. First time off in a while?
First 2 weeks not conducting since Christmas.
Wow. Well, let me invite our listeners that if they have a question or a comment about the European tour, the upcoming season, or whatever crosses their mind while you're here, they're welcome to join us at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. First, I want to congratulate you and everyone involved with the symphony for having such a successful undertaking.
Yeah, it was a really wonderful affair. It was very inspiring to the musicians, to me, to everyone who accompanied us from St. Louis, to see the absolutely rapturous reactions of all of the different publics, from London to Berlin to Switzerland and Lucerne, and then finally in Paris. It was really a great moment for St. Louis, for the region, and for even for the state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Brian Miller kept us up to date here, both here on the radio and also through the Post-Dispatch. In fact, last Saturday, she called the tour a triumph. With critical raves, audience enthusiasm, and full houses in the world's most important venues.
You know, there are lots of things. There are the big stories like that, and that's great, and we love that. My favorite moment of the entire tour came after concert tour 2, which was Berlin. And I took a couple of board members out to dinner because they'd been so supportive and done so much to help with the tour. I took them out to dinner, and I took them to a place which was right next to their hotel, so not right next to the concert hall, but a little ways away. And we were having dinner there and talking, and all of a sudden this couple stood up, and they showed us the program from the evening's concert. And they, you know, we conversed a little while, and they were so delighted and were, you know, just enthralled with the concert. And it turns out that they were actually from Trondheim in Norway, and that they had specifically picked 3 days where they could come to the Berlin Festival, and one of the reasons that they came at this period was that they were finishing off with wanting to hear the St. Louis Symphony. And it's the kind of moment where you are so pleased at the way St. Louis Symphony is the ambassador for the region in the whole world, and that people from, you know, Norway, Italy, wherever they may be coming from, they are coming because they know that you have something that is special, unique, remarkable, and prized. And they come to hear exactly that. And then, of course, when the orchestra delivers the way that they did, everyone is overjoyed.
Uh-huh. And that was Berlin, did you say?
That was in Berlin, yeah.
Yeah. What about the other locations? Do you have does a memory pop to mind from each one, whether it was something in the performance or something like you just related? And I know it must be sort of a whirlwind in your head, but what pops to mind?
You know, there are all sorts of things. I think the funny thing for me was I was so excited to bring the orchestra to venues where I've done quite a number of performances, but they had not yet been. They hadn't been to the Proms concerts in London. They hadn't been to the Berlin Festival. They had not been to the Lucerne with its marvelous concert hall right there on the lake. And they hadn't been to Playel to open the season. So these were things where I thought, well, this will be great. But, you know... The Proms is a really special thing. There are lots of tickets sold, and the concert was sold out after about a week and a half when they opened the ticket sales. And then there are people who stand and do what is called promenading, or promenading, and where you stand up and you have a whole sort of area of people standing at the bottom of the hall, Royal Albert Hall, and then there are people up at the top. And there were approximately 7,000 people in this hall, which is a very large number of people. And they're extremely quiet and hugely enthusiastic. And so when I came out and the orchestra stood up right at the beginning, there was this incredible thunderous applause, almost as though we'd finished the program. And I was so proud of the orchestra, and I looked at their faces, and they were so giddy with excitement to play for these people that, you know, I was just smiling from ear to ear. And then I thought, wait a minute, the first piece is Brahms' Tragic Overture. It's not supposed to be happy. Come on, put a scowl on your face. And so I managed to, you know, be professional and do what was necessary. But it was such a charge to have the orchestra, you know, kind of mainline this excitement and see what that really is, and then just get the audience to go nuts at the end.
You say 7,000 people. What's Powell Hall, a couple thousand?
Powell Hall is 2,800 seats.
Yeah, and I know a lot of these places, I think maybe you had a little rehearsal time, and some of them, I think, no rehearsal time. So when you're talking about a hall of 7,000, I don't know if you rehearsed there before, but, you know, acoustics have audiences affect acoustics. And so, I mean, how much of a wild card is that for you?
Well, I tell you, there are a couple of things. I mean, it's all calculated as much as one possibly can. The concert in London, which had probably the most tricky acoustic, this is the very large venue, was the one where we had a rehearsal. So we did have 2 hours in the hall, and that's also because it was being broadcast live, and in fact, I think we'll be broadcast on KWMU tomorrow night on SymphonyCast from NPR. So the BBC wanted to get the sound levels right, and that gave us a chance to check out the hall, and, you know, it was our first rehearsal after jet lag, so, you know, we were able to put everything in order. In Berlin, Lucerne, and Paris, it was walk out on stage, play the first note, react to it. And the thing for me which is really great is that we had already done a tour like this 2 years ago in California. We're going back this season. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, we played in four different venues, and the same thing. We only got to rehearse a little bit in a couple of them. The others, we went straight out and played. And so the experience for the orchestra is one of really thinking on your feet very quickly. And what, to me, is just almost a miracle about the quality of players we have in the St. Louis Symphony. And I don't know any other group that can do it quite this way. They will take somewhere between 5 seconds to 10 seconds, and they have actually recreated the sound they get in Powell Hall. And in four completely different acoustics. It's just extraordinary. Huh. And that's something that I know I can count on. And so, although it is indeed a wild card, and it is by no means easy, it's not without a certain amount of stress coming in and then really sort of locking your attention onto how do we sound here, how do I sound, how do I fit in with my colleagues, what's our overall conception of music. They are able to do that really quickly and then immediately get to the business of making music and, as one of the critics put it, filling everyone with joy.
At one of the locations, I'm thinking it was London, I'm not for sure, you had someone very special, I think, that was waiting backstage to see you, John Adams, the composer?
That's right. John Adams, who's a great friend of the orchestra, and the orchestra likewise reciprocates that friendship. He was performing both in London and in Berlin right after we got there. So he was, although I'd been to his rehearsal in the morning of our concert, and I thought, well, he's done a big, long rehearsal. It was like 5 hours of rehearsal. He said, oh, no, I've got to come this evening. So he was there that evening, and I think many of the players were wondering if it was a hologram because, you know, here was John Adams, you know, one of our favorite composers, just standing backstage and greeting them and telling them how much he enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm thinking Nixon in China, but he's also you're going to do some of his work, I think, in the new season as well, right?
That's it. We're actually performing City Noir, which is a very recent piece, and just continuing our love affair with him, you know, which extends not only to the St. Louis Symphony, but also to Opera Theater of St. Louis, who did the critically acclaimed Death of Klinghoffer this past season. And so, you know, there are all sorts of things that connect us with John, and we really love his music.
We're talking with David Robertson, the music director for the St. Louis Symphony. And David, it was officially announced just a few days ago that St. Louis Public Radio and the St. Louis Symphony have renewed our partnership for a third year.
Hooray!
I guess you knew that.
I did, but it's one of those things that, you know, one is so excited about it, and we enjoy it so much, the whole close collaboration, that it really does, you know, bear cheering every time that one mentions it.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about the new season, if we may. I don't even know where to begin. There's so much. Part of it will be... it will include, part of the season will include music inspired by the city of Vienna.
That's right. I mean, one of the things, there's so much repertoire out there that I like to sometimes follow kind of sub-themes, or if you will, in dramatic terms, a kind of subtext that's going on. When you think about it, Vienna is one of those cities which is associated with music on so many different levels. I mean, we talk about Mozart, Haydn, and Beethoven being the first Viennese school. In the modern times, we talk about, as the whole Habsburg Empire was coming apart at the seams around the First World War, we think of Schoenberg, Webern, Berg, Mahler as the second Viennese school, and then there are all of these people in between. It was such an important place that Brahms went there. We think of it as the birthplace of the waltz, and I don't think it's necessarily the birthplace, but it certainly incarnated the whole notion of the waltz, with the Strauss brothers, Johann Strauss, and so what we ended up doing was taking a look at the composers who lived there, the composers who were drawn there, you know, the works that were unimaginable without the influence of Vienna, both as a city and as a mecca, as a creative spark, and as a community that highly prized music and art.
And I guess the new season officially would begin next weekend. You'll be conducting?
Yes. I mean, we've had a lot of really great things. I mean, just tonight there's the music of Ray Charles at the hall. And we've got, you know, we had a couple of days ago, we had the first Pulitzer concert. We also had simultaneously the Forest Park concert, which everybody enjoys a lot. And even before that, when we went to Europe, we had our rally concert with everybody rooting for us as we got ready to board the planes at Lambert. So, you know, it feels a little bit strange to say, and the official start is now, but actually that's true. Next week we open with sort of a fireworks program, which befits the kind of celebration of the orchestra coming back in season, which finishes with Respighi's Pines of Rome, which is like the greatest movie music that never had a movie connected with it. And this is just fireworks on display all over the place. The most beautiful Chopin second piano concerto I think I've ever heard, played by Emmanuel Axe. I was lucky enough to do it with him on tour, 12 consecutive performances. And at the end of those, I immediately called up everybody in St. Louis and said, let's book Manny to do this, because it would be a crime for me to deprive the St. Louis audience of hearing this kind of extraordinary beauty.
Well,
you know, so there's that type of thing, you know, throughout the whole season.
Well, there's more than we can talk about, that's for sure. It's so full. I'm going to throw just a couple things out there, and if you can just comment briefly on them. Wynton Marsalis is coming. You're continuing your partnership with Circus Flora also.
That is, yeah, because it's one of the things that's really fun is you tend not to think of it this way, but when David Halen or Allison Harney or even Danny Lee is way up there on the violin or the cello, and you know they've got their fingers way up at the top, it's very much like tightrope walking, and if you fall off, it's really bad, and everybody knows when you've fallen off, and yet they manage to do all of these extraordinary acrobatics way up there on the high wire, whether it's on the cello or in the case of Circus Flora with the acrobats walking across, you know, suspended above the air, defying gravity. And so we looked once again after this very successful collaboration that Fred Bronstein managed to convince Circus Flora was a great idea to do, that we said, let's do it again and let's see where we can take this and just be inspired by each other person's art. You know, one of the things that's really great is, you know, it's the right type of collaboration when you have every musician coming up and saying, oh my God, this is so fabulous, I am so enjoying it, you know, because then you know that if they're enjoying it like that, the audience members are just going to be in seventh heaven.
David Robertson is the music director for the St. Louis Symphony, and we'll have more Cityscape after this. This is St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Steve Potter. Welcome back to Cityscape. David Robertson, the music director for the St. Louis Symphony, is on the line from New York, fresh back from a European tour. Is the whole family with you, David?
They are indeed, although, you know, we've got all sorts of various different activities of everybody. So I was pleased to find a moment where I could get a little island of calm to talk to you.
I see. It's good to be able to talk to an adult, I guess.
Actually, some of the things the kids say are really great, and you wish you kind of could live on their planet for a little while.
Well, people probably remember you have two older boys. When I say older, I guess they're teenagers, and you have two twins. And I don't know if you remember this, David. What are they, five now?
They are five, yep.
We talked to you on this program, I think it was days after they were born, if I'm remembering right, and Mary Edwards tells me the twins are getting ready to enroll in kindergarten?
Yep, they're in kindergarten now.
Oh, they are?
Yep, and playing violin and piano.
No kidding?
Yep.
Wow. Let's talk a little bit more about the new season, which you're just about to begin. I mentioned Wynton Marsalis will be one person you'll be hosting in this new season. Maybe mention a little bit about him and some of the other people you're excited about.
Well, I think any time Wynton plays, it's really an event. And he's going to be playing on our Red Velvet Gala Ball, which is on the Saturday, the 20th of October. And one of the really great things there is that he's playing his own swing symphony, which is like your very best oral history of the development of jazz. And of course, St. Louis has such an important place in the history of jazz and in the history of many musics that it seemed a fitting thing, you know, to bring him in. We've got all sorts of other great concerts coming up with people who, you know, we are seeing for the first time, but also people who we're inviting back. One of my favorites is coming up around the Thanksgiving period, where my own brother-in-law, Gil Shaham, the violinist, he was the one actually we went to tour California with a couple of years ago. He's coming in to play the Beethoven Violin Concerto, and I think that has such a beautiful sense of Thanksgiving that it works out perfectly for that that Thanksgiving weekend, where one can enjoy family and enjoy the close connections. And I think we're going to try and get the entire Robertson and Shaham clan into St. Louis, but there should still be a few hotel rooms left. We've got a number of concerts in which, and this I'm very proud of, soloists from the orchestra are playing. You know, whether it's people that are household names like Mark Sparks or David Halen, you know, flute and violin, or whether it's people like Danny Lee, but we've also got Allison Harney is playing. We've got Andrew Cuneo, our principal bassoon. We've also got Helen Kim. So there are all sorts of people where you can see just how deep the talent pool is in the St. Louis Symphony. And it's one of the things I think people appreciate it globally, but it's especially when you see these people step out and represent all their colleagues in the orchestra as soloists that you really begin to appreciate just how lucky we are in St. Louis to have a group like this. And, of course, this was one of the things that it was very nice to have the major publications in four European countries all say exactly the same thing, because it is one of the most recognized institutions worldwide for St. Louis. I think along with WashU and the Missouri Botanical Gardens, that's something that everybody thinks of in St. Louis. Some people also go, oh, isn't that the one with the arch? But I think most people go, isn't that the one with the St. Louis Symphony?
There you go.
So it is one of those things that's fascinating, that one.
Has the symphony ever played under the arch? I was curious about that.
They have in the past, and one of the things I would love to do is to go back and play there. I've got a couple of pieces that I would, you know, love to perform there. And so we're trying to figure out how we can do that so that it'll be really the perfect thing to do at the perfect time. But it's such an amazing structure when you see it. And, of course, when I look at it, it reminds me of a sine wave, which is like the most basic component of sound. So, you know, for me it just says, yeah, it's the gateway to the West, but it's also the gateway to music.
Wow, it's a beautiful thing. Well, in addition to some of the regulars that you just mentioned that are going to be performing in your new season, you have, as always, some world-class talent that will be performing at Pell Hall for the first time.
Yes, we do. We've actually got a number of artists who are making their debuts with us, and this is the sort of thing where, you see somebody's name on a program, and you say, gee, okay, who's Tasman Little? And then she plays the Elgar Violin Concerto, as she does with Sir Andrew Davis, in February. And ever afterwards, for everybody in the region, everybody who was at the concert hall, it's no longer just a name. It's a moment of inspiration in their lives that they'll never forget. And so that's the kind of thing that we really try and, you know, look at. And that's what builds the connection, which means that, you know, when you have a Radu Lupu, when you have a Yefim Bronfman, that you know this is part of this tradition of people who are supremely gifted at being able to touch our hearts with tones in a way that seems to defy description and comes closer to magic, which I guess is really pretty much what you mean when you're talking about art.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, when you plan a season that's so full as yours is, it must be something you plan years in advance, I would think.
You do plan years in advance. Part of that has to do with the availability of artists. So there are some artists, for example, that we've already reserved periods 3 years down the line to make sure that we that we're on the list of the places that they play. And that's not so much that they're so extraordinarily busy, but usually artists who are really of the highest caliber do pick and choose where they want to go. And they try not to do so many things that they're run ragged. And so you need to really get in your desires early. And I'm very pleased because everyone who's come to the St. Louis Symphony as a soloist always wants to come back. That's never a problem to get them back. It's only finding the date. And then with regard to the programs, there are lots of things that go on. I'm responsible, in the end, for all of the subscription programs. And then for the Live at Powell Hall events, Fred Bronstein has the majority of the responsibility for that. But essentially what we're doing is we're listening all the time to audience members, to musicians, to patrons, and looking at what's there as a possibility, and then trying to put it all into a harmonious season so that whatever your own particular tastes, you'll be able to look at what's going on at Powell Hall and say, wow, that's really cool, I want to be involved with that.
David Robertson of the St. Louis Symphony is our guest. Again, if anyone would have a question or a comment, please, here's your chance to talk to David at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK is the number. David, I understand also in this new season you're going to be welcoming four new symphony musicians.
Yes, that's right. We've got people who are coming in principal viola, and we've got some other string players who are coming in. We've got a contrabassoon who's coming in. Oh, my goodness. And that may be one of them now on the other phone. Let me silence that. So maybe somebody has a question and they're calling me directly. You never know how these
Do you give out your number, do you?
You know, the thing is, I actually am fairly friendly with a large number of people, so I tend not to worry about how that works. As long as it's not, you know, a telemarketer, then I'm usually...
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, you know, that's just the modern life we live in. No, we've got a number of different players coming in, because one of the things that's fascinating about an orchestra is that you have a long history. We're the second oldest orchestra in the United States. I can't remember. I mean, this memory goes when you start getting up to 130. We're either 131st or 132nd season. It's really been going for quite a long time. And what that means is that you have people who've been in the orchestra, in some cases, upwards of 40 years, and they carry a tradition which they give to the newest members. And the newest members bring both a reverence for what has been done before, but also a new kind of energy and inspiration and a viewpoint which is particularly theirs. And the great thing for me, what makes my job so fabulous, is that I'm about blending all of these different visions of music together to make something that's harmonious. And it can sometimes be a little bit pushing and pulling with many orchestras. But in St. Louis, there's something really special that happens with the musicians, and that is that the music is so important to everyone that individual egos are not the thing that people worry about. They worry about getting the music to sound as good as it possibly can. And that is a really remarkable attribute that not many orchestras share. It really does set the St. Louis Symphony apart, And I'm absolutely persuaded that you can hear that from the first note in any of their performances of whatever repertoire they're playing.
382-8255, 382-TALK is our number. And David, we do have a call. Let's take that now. It's Anne Marie, and she joins us right now on Cityscape. Hi, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks. Oh, I just wanted to say that a friend of mine in London sent a YouTube of Mr. Robertson conducting Beethoven's Ninth Chorus at, I think, St. Pancras, maybe?
Oh, yes.
It was just thrilling to watch. It was just thrilling. He didn't know that you know, had a St. Louis connection. It was just like, look at this great thing. And I watched it probably four times in a row. So I just wanted to compliment you on your general élan and that particular thing, which is adorable. So you're such a treasure here in St. Louis, and we really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was a pop-up performance of the last movement of Beethoven's Ninth in the train station, the St. Pancras train station, which has the Eurostar coming in. And so it was this whole connection of the importance of brotherhood, both for the European Union and crossing borders and travel and all of that. And they decided to do it where, all of the chorus were dressed up just as train passengers. But then they sang really well, and the idea was to try and get the rest of the audience to join in. And so the audience enjoyed looking, but I think many of them were scared to join in because the quality of the chorus was so high. But, you know, you could hum along. That wasn't a problem.
Well, David, speaking of your recent European tour, and it's been since the late 90s, as we said, since the St. Louis Symphony had done that, I've heard a rumor there may be plans for another at some point.
Well, the thing is, when we went over, what was interesting was when I first took the orchestra in 2005-06 season, I had all of my European presenter friends saying, so when are you going to bring them over? And I said, you know, we'll wait until we can really bring over a program which I feel represents St. Louis. And they said, well, what do you mean, you know, by that? And I said, well, St. Louis is not about showing off. St. Louis is about content. And so this one of the things that excited the presenters this time was that we went over for festival concerts, and festivals have very specific themes in their particular cases. And so what they were delighted with was the ability of the orchestra to really tailor-make programs that fit in perfectly with their different festival themes. So, you know, when we were there, you know, I'd all been saying, oh, you just wait until you hear them. And, of course, then once they actually did hear them, they said, wow, this is great. When can you come back? So we're looking into various possibilities of doing things. You want to be able to do it in such a way that you don't, you know, go into debt in order to finance the thing. And yet at the same time, when you're a world-class orchestra, you do have world-class responsibilities. And that means playing for your home constituency and realizing that people around the world want to hear what your home constituency is hearing all the time.
Well, speaking about hearing the orchestra, we have a question from David in Wellston. He wants to know, will there be any recordings issued of the symphony in the near future?
We do have a recording project that's coming up probably for issue in, 2014, and more details to follow on that. It's the same thing. You know, you don't want to talk out of turn until something is really ready to be announced. You feel bad about that sometimes because you get so excited about a project that's in the offing. But you just have to be patient. And the reason is exactly that when we announced, for example, the European tour, we announced every place and then we said, and we'll be playing someplace in London. And the reason is no orchestra is allowed to say they're playing at the Proms until the Proms announces its entire season. And they've always done it that way, and all the other orchestras, doesn't matter if it's Berlin Philharmonic or Concertgebouw or whoever it is, they all have to abide by those rules. The reason is that once they announced the season on April 19th of the Proms and the St. Louis Symphony was there, 10 days later you couldn't buy a ticket for us. So this is the sort of thing that, you know, I mean, I was just walking around today and seeing lines snaking around New York City-sized blocks of people wanting to get their iPhone 5, you know, so it's a question of, you know, waiting when that is. But there are more recordings in the pipeline, which I'm very pleased about.
And regarding the Proms again, of course, this is the first time you were there with the St. Louis Symphony, but you've performed at the Proms more than a dozen times, I guess.
You know, it was my 21st appearance at the Brahms concert.
Oh, wow.
In 1995, and so in the end, I felt I was legally allowed to have a drink.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I celebrated with a nice glass of wine.
One thing before I let you go, David, we should also keep an eye on our neighbor here at Grand Center, the Nine Networks, because they're featuring some pieces they've done in the orchestra.
That's right. Actually, we've got a number of things coming up. I think you can find the details on our website, stlsymphony.org, and that has all of the information about what those are. It's very nice to see Grand Center really starting to get this kind of energy and this wind in its sails with all of the extraordinary organizations that are down there now that St. Louis Public Radio is down there, and with Channel 9 and the various different ways that these things can just make the beauties and the richness of the St. Louis culture, you know, better known that way and get the message out. I think that's a fabulous thing.
The St. Louis Symphony's music director, David Robertson, has joined us from New York. We look forward to seeing you next weekend when you'll be conducting at Pell Hall. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much, Steve.
And I remind our listeners to join us tomorrow evening for a rebroadcast of one of the St. Louis Symphony's European tour performances. That will be tomorrow night, 8 p.m. This is your chance to hear what a sold-out crowd heard in London earlier this month. That's the St. Louis Symphony's 2012 BBC Proms Concert tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, right here on St. Louis Public Radio. And don't forget, the live St. Louis Symphony broadcast for the new season begins Saturday, September 29th, also at 8 p.m. Coming up next, a conversation with Nick Lowe. This is St. Louis Public Radio.